Welcome to the Trauma Survivorhood Podcast. I'm your host, Sarah, an IFS-informed trauma recovery coach. This show features interviews from guests all around the world as they share their impactful stories and deliver hope and inspiration through their personal post-traumatic growth. We explore and discuss resources and coping strategies to support the survivor community to thrive in their own healing journeys. Enjoy. Welcome back to the Trauma Survivorhood Podcast. I'm your host, Sarah. I have with us today Colette Ramazzani. She goes by the name Coco.
Oh, yes.
Coco is an inspirational speaker and an author. She was born in the Dominican Republic of the Congo. At an early age, she's been fascinated by the beauty of the environment. She particularly loves flowers, trees, mountains, and bodies of water. She just loves all nature. It was because of her passion for nature that she decided to write Lily and the Gift, Planet Earth, to share her concern for our planet and ways in which we can take care of it. Coco often has speaking engagements about the rights of women, children, and their safety. She's fluent in 5 languages. She earned a Bachelor's of Science of Business Studies and Master's in Business Admin from SNU in the United States, where she's lived for several years. She is also the author of Tell This to My Mother by Joseph E. Mwantwali. It's a story about her life, and she was in the Congo a war rape victim. This book now has been published about her life in both English and in French. She lives in the beautiful Manchester, New Hampshire in the US of A, and she's here to tell her story. So Coco, thank you so much for being here today. So going from being in the DR of Congo, a war rape victim, we know you had a lot of religious and spiritual trauma as well. And now you're here in the US, you're writing books, you're telling your story, you're an author, you're a speaker. How did you get here? What has your journey been like?
Thank you so much, Sarah, for having me again. And this is really like, it's a big honor to be here to tell my story because my journey has been a very difficult one. Which I didn't anticipate life to be this way. I learned there is another reality in the world or in life. I lost my parents when I was just little, like a toddler, because I don't remember both of my parents at all faces. I don't remember any words that a parent can say to the child. Mm-hmm. I've been trying to, you know, to do the exercises in my brain to try to remember what my mom said, what my dad said. Nothing. I can just imagine that, you know, like a mother can say to a child, oh, do that, oh, you, or a father. But also with my father, I have a different picture of him, because I learned why he got to the point of having a lot of kids and why he married a lot of women. Being educated now, I understood the anxiety he was in. So I'm sure he didn't love me to begin with because I was a girl. I came to understand he wanted more boys than girls. Being a girl, so I'm like, that means he never really loved me because I was born a girl. But among all my siblings today, I have a huge responsibility, and I'm the one who have high education with master's degree among all 22 children. So I got to the point of saying my father himself was a victim of the culture and the system. So I have to forgive him. But to try to remember any word from my mom or my dad, nothing really. Mm-hmm. So that's how I grew up now with my half-siblings. But in our culture, we don't really call half-siblings. The siblings is just a sibling because we are all the children from one father, even if we had different mothers, that the culture we have. So growing up wasn't that easy. After our father passed away, as rich as he was, so I mean, like I was born rich, with a rich father. My mom never worked. My mom was just a staying-home mom, and I came to learn a lot about my mom. I asked many questions, and I'm gonna write a book about just her. She never really know how to read or write, because she got married very early, just 13 or 12, something like that. So, and after I learned how my mom was in her marriage, like learn about my parents, that made me more strong and made a decision of what kind of woman I want to become in this world, not to be like my mother. So I needed to get education. And to get that education wasn't that easy, was hard, because financially our sisters, now they need to take care of us. And when our father died, there was only 5 grown up. All other kids were all small, so they need someone to take care of them. All other, you know, like 15 or 17, because we were 22. So we all needed to be taken care of. So this made hard for these siblings who were married, had decision to divide us again, because we couldn't stay in one house. Before that, we were under one roof with our father and our mothers, because the house we were born in was very big, 12 bedrooms. My dad had like a compound just for himself, as rich as he was. But the big mistake he made, he didn't teach any of his wife anything he was doing. So he was the only one provider, you know, in the house. And when he died in car accident, everything was gone for a second like this. So we now went to be in different homes, and they couldn't keep all those women under one house without a man in there. You know, you can imagine how hard it would be 5 women to be in one house without a man in there and all these kids. So each woman will try to privilege, you know, her own children. But I came to learn so much how my father was able to manage his family. And it's not like my dad married all those women due to their religion. No, he didn't have any religion. He didn't. But just because he could, with money, and the system allowed him to do so. And then I came to realize that, yeah, he was looking for more boys than girls he was having. Not knowing that he was the one who was giving gender to us, not our mothers. But in short, that's how we came to live now after he was gone. Due to the car accident that happened, he was in business trip. To buy his, I mean, like his products. He had mining. He was doing farming, and he had stores where he was selling different, things in there. So he was very, very hardworking. But one thing, he was under anxiety for the gender, you know, for his kids. So I made the decision to get education before I could do anything else in life, marriage or kids. And to pay for school wasn't that easy anymore, because these sisters and one of our brother who was taking care of us, now they also had their own children, so they had also their own responsibility. And the money that our father left was mismanaged, because it didn't help that longer. It's about culture, and I've been fighting that culture, because before I fight the culture in entire country, I need to start from my own family first. Not being able to grow up with all my siblings together, and not being able to see my mother because she died. I was already at the age where I could remember her, but because she was taken away from me before I reached the age where I could memorize probably things, I didn't have a chance to see her anymore. When I was told that she passed away, I was getting ready to go look for her. And then they told me she died. Mm-hmm. I was in my last year in high school. And because I couldn't travel before that, nobody was gonna allow me to go. Mm-hmm. But I was like, once I'm done with high school, nobody will stop me anymore to go look for her. Unfortunately, they told me she died. So that was another bombshell, really, for me. So I need to build up myself again. Mm-hmm. After really I made that decision to get education, that was now my only hope, the key I could give to myself for a better future. I was very, very smart, because I went only to two schools. I had only two activities at that time. My focus was in school, and also I became a Protestant or Pentecostal. Mm. Just because I loved to sing. I was attracted by kids were singing. Like one day I was passing by that church and I heard them singing. So I entered there and I decided to become a member of that church, which is a very conservative church of Sayuni in Bukavu. But that also became my big problem, because that's where I experienced the first sexual abuse by the pastor who was supposed to be a protector, and also who was the head of the choir, and he was the coach of my vocal, voice. He was the first man I saw, like grown-up man I saw naked, and I touched. And this time I was just a teenager now. I was accepted or transferred to the grown-up choir because of my voice, because I started from children choir first. Mm-hmm. And then they discovered my voice in there. So they transferred me to grown-up choir, which was called Choir A or Choir A in English. Mm-hmm. But this pastor, I described that in the book, and I've been talking about that on my YouTube channel. Mm-hmm. How that started, how that went, and how I confronted him. So he abused me for years, and it was just really a nightmare. Mm-hmm. And that's the reason I don't trust the pastor anymore. I don't, because I didn't expect to be sexually abused, molested for years. in church, because some of the abuse happen inside of the church and other happen in his house. Or another time also, he was abusing me in his office where we used to go to do practice for like when we need like to record our songs. Each time it was just a nightmare. Sometimes those abuse happened in other church members' houses when we visited them. So each occasion he had, just the two of us, he was touching me, doing things, you know, just awful to me. So I was able to leave the church and then continue with my education. Then when I was in college now, that 1 year, also sexual abuse there, I accepted to fail. For the first time, I failed in school because I didn't accept to sleep with a professor. And that women or girls are abused in school in Congo. It's hard for a woman to excel. No matter how smart you are, it's very difficult because all men sees in you, it's your body. To give you your grade, you have to sleep with them. And which I said, no, I can't. I prefer to fail than anything. I'm not stupid. And this was the first time I failed in college. So I left and I didn't continue there anymore. I changed to another college which belonged to my church. And there, my sister was supporting me after just one semester. She told me she wasn't gonna continue paying for me anymore. So I stopped. Life became so hard. I was gonna get married. Then I called off the wedding because the guy cheated just a few months before we said, I do. After that, life was really hard. I went to Rwanda to live with another sister. And then the war, the genocide, you know, started in 1994. And that sister also abused me there so badly, so badly. I went back again to our home country and started trying to survive again. I had a little business I started because always I do create my own job. You know, that is my nature. With that, I ended up finding myself working in politics. Because we had like a second war. And in that war, I was looking for a job anywhere. I couldn't find it. Only in politics, I could find a job, like to be a secretary. And I was homeless for the first time in my own country. I was sleeping in the tent because I was living at one of my sister and her husband wasn't paying rent for 6 months. We got kicked out of the house. I needed to find a job, you know, to pay rent and to survive. So I did that. And so I got the job in politics to be like an aide or secretary in our term. I started working and then I got raped the first time by my boss there. But the first salary that I got, that I rented a place and I moved out now. Then I need to move with my sister with her children. She had like 4 children at that time. So that's how I continue to support myself now with that job. before I became so like being raped so bad in that job. I was transferred to work now with the president because when they discovered my skills, they transferred me to work with the president, saying like the president needs somebody like me. I was speaking a lot of languages and also the computer skills and just my ability to work the way I do. So I was transferred to work with the president, who was Wamba Diawamba. Then we went to another city, and that's another awful situation really happened, being abandoned in the military camp after the attack that happened in Kisangani. I was abandoned by my boss in the military camp, and I was systematically raped by the soldiers. And that was, I just want to die. You know, I was taken to Uganda, to Kampala after that, but the damage was all done. That was 1999. In 2000, that's when I was able to travel to come to America. But after that rape, I went to the pharmacy to buy any antibiotic I could think of. Any. Ampicillin, whatever antibiotic I could think of. Because I was just thinking, I don't know what I'm carrying now. And I was afraid of being pregnant. And that few days later, I got my period. The one thing was resolved, because I was like, I'll never do abortion. If I found myself pregnant, I'll just go home and die, or, you know, kill myself and die with that baby instead of doing any abortion, because I wasn't going to have a baby from the rape at all. And being a single mother in Congo, it's something that you don't even want, because there is this stigma of, you know, you are not respected, and it's just you are called a prostitute. You'll be called all kind of names, really. You are, so you don't even wish that at all. So coming to America in 2000, that was the first time I said what happened to me, somebody. And I asked to be tested. And after that, the result was what I feared the most: being infected. I collapsed when the doctor gave me the result. Other things from there, they were, oh, they're gonna cure you and that, because it's something that I never thought of, being infected with HIV virus, as I lived in abstinence due to the rule of my church. You have to have a sex only after marriage. You can't have a sex before marriage. As I was molested with that pastor like that. So that was a trauma already there. And then being raped. And then the bad news of my health. I just want to die.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It has been a fight to survive every day. I couldn't talk. I just want to die all the time. Which is, you ask yourself, why a woman cannot be safe anywhere? You go to work, you are abused just because you are a woman.
Mm.
You know, how can we provide for ourselves then if we can't be safe at work? So since then, the medicine I take every day, it's like a little pharmacy.
Mm.
And I don't really wish this to anybody, that I decided to start speaking up.
Mm.
Sorry.
Yeah, take a minute.
So hard to take medicine every day. It's really hard. But to the doctor, often I took pills several times. Just want to die. I couldn't believe this is the life I have now. But even that, I didn't stop my dedication for education. I continued. Sometimes I was discharged from the hospital and go to school with my band-aid on, still have a band-aid on from IV and that, and I am in the classroom until I finish to get master's degree. It was like that. Often, on my graduation, I was coming out of the hospital, the bachelor.
Mm-hmm.
One of my doctor needed to be there with me, just in case if something will happen, so they could rush me quickly to the hospital again. That's the accommodation I was getting. I was in the wheelchair because I was just coming out of the hospital. But I needed to be in my graduation.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just thinking of my mom.
Mm-hmm.
It's like she never knew how to read or to write her name. And I was saying, why she gave birth to me? Why? I wish I wasn't born at all. I wish. It's painful. The disease that you never thought you would fight. But that's what now you are fighting with, because you went to work.
Mm-hmm.
Just because you went to work to try to provide for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like you look for it.
Mm-hmm.
You avoided it. Living in abstinence. But because you went to work. You got infected. Because you go to church, you got molested. You wonder, where am I going to be safe?
Mm-hmm.
Where? I can't be safe home. I can't be safe at church. I can't be safe at work, in school. Is it a curse to be a woman? That's what I go through often. But I just want every woman to know it's not our fault. We are human beings just like men.
You've been through so much, and I just want to take a minute and acknowledge you for that, that you have pushed through. And I almost started chuckling, and not in a disrespectful way, but when you were saying you went on to get your master's and you just kept going to school and you'd leave the hospital and go to school, I'm thinking, this is wild. Like, you're wild in all the right ways. I just want you to know that you are unstoppable. And I'm really proud of all of your accomplishments.
Thank you.
And I just want to take a minute and make sure, are you okay to continue? I know this is really difficult for you.
Yes, I'm okay to continue. It's hard. Yeah. It's not easy, but I have to keep fighting. I have to tell the world so we can change this. My presence as a woman doesn't have to be taken as I am a sex object to any man present near me. It doesn't have to be that way. You know, I was grateful when I went to SNU, to Southern New Hampshire University here. No professor ever talked to me about sexual thing. None. That's how it should be. From the beginning, I was afraid of asking a question to the professor.
Oh, yeah.
Because I was like, no, he's going to tell me to meet him to the hotel, because that's how things happened in Congo. Right. Each time I was trying to ask my grade, to get my grade, the professor, if you wanted to get your grade, meet me at the hotel Chikoma. That is one of the hotel in Bukavu. No, I'm not going to meet you there. Just give me my paper and I can see my grade. No.
When you started working in politics and then they recognized your skills, you could speak five languages. You had great computer skills. You had a good work ethic. So they sent you to work for the president.
Yeah.
But still, even there, they sent you there as a promotion because of your skills, and the president was still abusing you in that in that way.
Yeah.
Even after they recognized your skills. So I'm just, it's mind-boggling to me, and we need to hear these stories, and we need to know how we can help, you know, and what we can do. And I think you're using your voice very powerfully. And I'm thinking about this book. So your whole book, with Joseph Montwali, Tell This to My Mother. So he tells your life story. How did that book come about? Did he contact you? He was one of the doctors that you were working with. How did that come to be? How did it feel to put your story like this out? I mean, people can buy your life story on Amazon right now. Like, how does that feel for you?
When I arrived, Dr. Joseph, they knew each other with my sister. When I arrived, I was supposed to go to Washington, D.C. Okay. And I didn't go to that conference. I called my sister to come pick me up at the airport. Because when I came, I couldn't talk clearly or openly to my sister. Because I knew my conversation was all like on, you know, like controlled by the intelligence. Because I did also the training, you know, for the intelligence things and that. Right. Sometimes I do say being smart is a curse to me. My beauty, it's a curse probably. And the other time I say it's not my fault, really, to be born this way, you know. So Dr. Mwantwali, you know, came to visit, and he heard that I was working with Wamba Diawamba, the president of that time, and he wanted to talk to me. And I'm like, I can't, I can never, never talk to a man, really. I can never. I was so angry. I was so broken. I was just so in pain. And now to see this man is coming to ask me to talk to me, and you are a Congolese, really? You want me to kill you, probably, because I was so angry, Sarah, very angry. And then he left, and he didn't give up. He just, you know, continued reaching out to me. And that was now after years, really years. I was very sick. I was going in the hospital often. And I was full-time student, full-time employee. I was working at the Filene's at that time. But I was very, very sick. I became very sick. The medication wasn't working. My body was rejecting many medication, and I was also overdosing myself because I want to die. I took a lot of pills several times. I want to die, and I need to be rushed to the hospital, and they have to drain all the medication out of my body. If I was in Congo, I would be dead by now. But the team that I have here is just incredible. So that's when I said, you know, I'm not going to die like an uneducated woman. I was in the hospital after taking a lot of pills. I told my sister to bring me my computer. And I start writing things down. And then I told Dr. Joseph, okay, you wanted to write a story. Now you can write it. So I was giving him material, and then he needed to deal with it, because I said, I'm going to die, but somebody can continue the work. I'm going to give him all the information, because I was very weak. There's no way I could really like deal with all these things, like the publisher and that. I was very weak, and that's how we became now to start working together. He came because he was living in New York, in Syracuse. He came to visit me at one point. We had a session. I couldn't even finish. I was back in the hospital. So each time I worked on that book, I was back in the hospital. I wanna die. I was back in psychiatric center because I just want to die. Each time I work on the chapter, I was back in the hospital. At one point, my doctors were like, don't write anymore. I'm like, no, I have to finish. Because if I die, I want the world to know what happened to me. I don't want to die like an uneducated woman. And also, what happened to me happened to others and will continue to happen if we don't say anything. So I'm not going to die with this secret, because this will be to give power to those who did those things to me. But they are powerful men, but I'm going to have to expose them and to try to fight for others, not only for me, but for others. So that's how I decided now to work with Dr. Mwantwali. I came to understand he was a completely different man than those who raped me and who molested me. Even if he's a man, he's a Congolese man, but he's caring, loving, and respectful.
Now that you share your story so publicly, Has there been any backlash for the politicians or the men in Congo or any of the professors that this story has, you know, shined the light on their crimes that they committed against you? Has there been anything there?
The president died. He died. But the pastor was removed from his power in church. And because I confronted him, I even sent a letter to him, not only a book itself, but I even sent a letter to him telling him, if you're still doing those things to others, the one you did to me, you have to stop. This is not how the Bible said, as a pastor, you have to do to children.
Yeah.
You know, you confuse my faith.
Mm.
Teach me not to touch a man, not to be touched, not to have a sex before marriage. Not, and you are the one, the first man. You made my hands touch a man.
Mm.
You made you made me have oral sex with. The same pastor was teaching me that, Sarah. In his house, a church facility. In his office, in the bookstore, at church. I'm a kid here, a teenager. He had a kids like me, you know. And he was laughing about it. That's how painful it was to me. After he knew I was orphaned, he knew nobody would protect me. My family even confronted him. One day he was bringing me back at night home. They were waiting for him. That's how bad it got. I was a kid. I wasn't supposed to know a man at that age, like to see a grown-up man naked. I wasn't supposed. Like sometimes I go through the treatment of just throwing up. Because I still have that backlash of smell of his sperm. I have to take a Zofran. I have to be in the hospital. They have to treat me for a week or weeks until my stomach gets settled down again. Because that smell is just coming into me. The smell of his sperm, the way he was ejaculating in my mouth. That's how bad it gets. Why do that to somebody else's child? I have a father. I have a mother. I am somebody else's child. So that's how I confronted him. And I told the church. So they removed him. I was like, I'm going to fight back. Yeah. And my sister, he's the one who took that letter to him. And he was in the his office. And she told him, I know everything you did to my sister, and I'm going to deal with you myself.
Wow.
Unfortunately, my sister died before she took him to court. But for him to be removed from his power was a big, big, big victory.
Yeah.
And then because of that, he didn't survive. He didn't live longer.
Wow.
He died very quickly.
Wow.
Yeah. So when I made the first video, his son tried to reach out to me. People from church, some of four people, reach out to me, like to try to attack me. And I was like, they hired a journalist. I think if you go on my YouTube, you're going to see that video. I think I did like two or three videos about that journalist. I put his picture there. I went on Facebook. I found his picture. I took it and I publish it. And I said, if you try one more time, one more time attacking me again, you're going to go to prison on his behalf. Because right now, I am a dangerous. I'm not that kind of Christian who's going to forgive. No, I pass that. I will take you to the justice that you're going to have to be paid for. Who are you? Who do you think you are to tell me to take my video down? This is my story. Oh, he's dead already. Forgive him. I'm like, go forgive your father. But I'm not forgiving him. And this is my story.
Yeah.
He wrote it with me because he did those things to me. I own this story now, and I can tell it any way I want. I want to expose him, I will expose him. If he didn't want to be exposed, then don't touch somebody else's child.
Yeah.
Follow the Bible the way it says.
Yeah.
No sex outside of marriage, no sex before marriage. He was married. He was a father. But why touching me? Why asking me to do oral sex on him? Why? So he wrote that story himself. He didn't feel ashamed of writing it. So why do you feel ashamed on his behalf? Why? They back off, all of them. So that's how I fought those things there and made big change in church and in entire city, because Bukavu, it's small like this.
Yeah.
And I was well known in Bukavu because of my voice of singing solo. Yeah. And that pastor was well known also in entire city because of involvement in church, that he had power in church. So when I made that video, it was a bombshell in the city.
Wow.
Yeah. But they all back off, and they all now, please speak for us. Speak for us. I got a lot of messages. Yeah, speak for us. Yeah. Speak for us.
Yeah.
He did that to me also. He did that to me also. He did that. He did that. So I wasn't the only victim.
Good for you. You're using your voice, and I'm so grateful. I know you battle with feelings of wanting to not be here, but that story right there is exactly why you are still here. And you have much more to tell. You have much more change to make. I loved it. At the very beginning, you said, I don't remember the exact words, but you said something to the effect of, I need to change the culture for me before I can change the culture of a country.
Yes.
And that's what you've done, is you changed your culture. You kicked ass there. You went on to get your master's. You are a highly educated woman now, and you are working through your trauma. And in your healing, you are being a voice for others. And now you can change the culture in your country and in other places. You know, we know obviously these are horrific crimes in certain countries where they can get swept under the rug by big people like politicians.
Yeah.
But we know that really it can happen anywhere in the world, from sexual harassment all the way to aggressive, aggravated assaults. So people need voices, and people do need safe spaces to go and work, home, church, your apartment. You should be free to be safe in places. So I'm really grateful that you are still here. And I know that the battle of suicidal ideation is still very big for you, but I just want to honor your story and let you know, we're really grateful that you show up for that battle armored every day, because I know you fight with, I don't want to be here, but I need to be here, but I don't want to be here, but I need to be here.
It is exhausting. And going to therapy, it's not a shame. It's not a shame. I'm telling people, if you need to go to therapy, do it. It's not a shame. I know in African community, it's more taboo than even in others. It's not a shame. I do go to therapy. I do take medicine.
Yeah.
It's not a shame. You have to take care of yourself.
Mm.
If you went through trauma, go to therapy, see counselor, see psychiatric.
Mm.
Take care of yourself. It's
yeah.
not a shame. The stigma is there, but so what?
Yeah.
So what? The first things you need to care about, it's you, not that stigma.
You've been here now in the States for a couple of decades.
Yes.
And the thing that you loved and cherished from your home was, of course, the nature side of things.
Yeah.
And you talk so greatly. I love your website because it's just so sweet about the nature and the beauty of Congo,
yes.
which is what you believe is the creation of God versus the human being's creation of this culture, which in Congo
yeah.
is rather nasty and controlling and manipulative and really derogatory to women and really abusive. But there you are in this land where the cultures that humans have created is awful, but the beauty and the nature that God has created was just overwhelmingly beautiful. And I know you love the mountains and greenery
yes.
and bodies of water
yes.
so much so that you have written this book, Lily and the Gift, Planet Earth. And this is really to address your concerns about what violence and what humans are doing to the earth, but also it was written to really honor your passion for nature. And I know nature is so healing for you. You talk about that on your YouTube.
Yes.
And I know obviously therapy has been huge for you, but getting into nature and remembering the beauty of your country
yes.
has been really therapeutic and healing for you. So tell us a little bit about your book, share with us a little bit there. And I just want to give you a platform to share this beautiful story that you've written.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Yeah, nature, remember, from the time they told me my mom wasn't there, I remember spending a lot of time in nature. And until today, I do spend a lot of time, like at my apartment here. I mean, I choose this place because there is a big trees up here. So usually I do sit on my balcony and just looking at the trees and that. Because there is this fresh air in the nature that you can breathe and, you know, get a peace of mind. And that's how I used to treat myself. I think I suffered from depression since I was a kid. But I wasn't just, diagnosed. From there, because mental health in Congo or in Africa in general, it's a taboo topic to talk about. But from the time they told me, because when I knew my mom wasn't there or my dad, I asked a question, because the person I thought was my mom, she broke the news to me to tell me, I'm not your mom, I'm your sister. At 6 years old, that's when she told me. So now I need to buckle up, to build my muscles and to try to find another place where I could get energy and the nature, just to look the beauty of nature. I was asking myself, this was created before me and before any human. So who created this? It's beautiful. The mountain has his own unique beauty. The valley has his own unique beauty. And the trees that can be found in the mountain and the valley, they are completely different, but they have a different beauty. So if he could done all this, how he cannot take care of me? And that was my strength every day to survive everything I was going through. It was just powerful and beautiful. And I started creating like my little garden, to create my little garden. So that was kind of for therapy, but nobody knew. Yeah, but it was a therapy for me. Just like a singing, it was a therapy for me. Because when I was singing, I felt like I don't feel that pain I was going through home. I was just in different place. The same thing when I am in the forest or going for a walk or just observing the beauty of mountains and trees or river, I forget about the pain. And the trees, so if we don't have these trees, how are we gonna breathe? How are we gonna forget about the pain? How are we gonna heal ourselves emotionally, mentally? We can't. So we have to preserve it because really that it's my medicine, the nature. It's my medicine. Yeah. It's my medicine.
I love that. Do you want to show us your book? Do you have it right there with you? So this is a children's book, but really it's for anyone who wants to learn
For
more about.
everyone, I wrote it in the style that can be written by anyone.
Beautiful. That's beautiful. Coco Ramazzani, thank you so much for joining us today. This has been a difficult but really beautiful conversation. And I just admire your tenacity to keep pushing forward to build something different than what your life would have been if you had stayed with the Congolese culture and you broke out of that mold and you built something beautiful for yourself. And we're so grateful that you're telling your story. So tell people where they can learn more about you, where they can watch these videos that you're talking about on your YouTube. And I'm going to have all this linked up in the show notes below for you.
Thank you again, Sarah. Thank you. I really appreciate it, for you to give me a spot to talk to you. I'm very grateful. So they can find me on YouTube, Coco Ramazzani, or Facebook, Coco Ramazzani, and also on Instagram, on Twitter. And the book can be found also in any store where they sell book, Amazon also, and Barnes and Noble, Target, Walmart, and other places they do buy and sell it themselves also. And on my website, ColetteWorldGroup.com.
Thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate this. And yeah, we'll see you later. Have a great rest of your day.
Thank you, Sarah. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening or watching this episode of Trauma Survivorhood. For more info, show notes, and links, check out the episode guide below. Until next time, be well, survivors.